Pelican Song. I was the kind of 30-year-old who had only recently left adolescence behind. I was mostly a modern dancer. I rehearsed, I went to class. I worked the concession stand in an art movie theater where actors and filmmakers ushered. A novelist with strong powers of concentration manned the ticket booth. I had a studio apartment in Gramercy Park that looked out on an ivied brick wall. When I wanted to get out of the city, I would take the bus to visit my mother in Central Jersey. My mother was far along into her second marriage. She and her husband built a house in an abandoned peach orchard with the proceeds from the sale of my childhood home and his antique car supply boutique. They acted as their own general contractors and saved a lot of money. Now that the house was finished, they had their collective eye open for an investment scheme. Like the ticket taker, the man my mother married was really a novelist. My mother created an author's den for him in the upper portion of their beautiful new house. She decorated it with my lost father's old desk, very attractive and manly with brass inlays, and his leather chair. Everything faced out over the in-ground swimming pool and the putting green, and beyond that to the old orchard and then the woods. Couldn't be more inspiring, everyone said. My mother, always interested in words, took seriously, in a way lost to the world with my generation, the role of helpmate. She typed her husband's manuscripts, judiciously editing them as she went along. She served lunch on a tray left atop a small marble pedestal outside the den door. And she checked the mailbox at the end of the long drive for the latest news from his literary agent. If there was another rejection waiting, she prepared the gentlest delivery. At the art movie theater in the West Village, we took failure for granted. In the house in the orchard, the stakes were much higher. Each time a rejection letter came, though often flattering, even encouraging, it represented an enormous blow to the whole enterprise. Even so, I decided to try my own hand at fiction writing. I joined a group. I wrote one-paragraph stories that I liked to read out loud to my mother over her kitchen speakerphone while she was preparing the meals that went upstairs. For Christmas that year, my mother's husband gave me a lovely, quite serious pen with a kind note folded inside the box. But at the movie theater, no one allowed my mini-stories any more importance than my modern dance performances. My biggest obstacle to respect, however, had to do with men. I had an odd figure for a modern dancer, Rubenesque, my composer boyfriend called my body when pressed for compliments. This was long before I found the tiny crimson panties tucked beneath his buckwheat pillow. I also heard him say Rembrandt. My mother, it's worth noting, took figures very seriously. I often felt this was another feature of her generation, like the typing and the meals on trays. In my time, I believed, a body could be different and still be okay. But when the composer mentioned Botero, I lost confidence. After the panty disclosure, I started seeing a painting student. He ushered part-time and still lived with his parents on the Upper East Side. His beard had only developed under his mouth and nose so far, and though born at New York Hospital, he spoke with an English accent. Some days, I'd meet him after class at Cooper Union. He was a freshman. I felt like his nanny waiting at the curb, but he was understanding in a way I think was more intense because he was still living at home when I began getting the late-night phone calls from my mother. The call started sometime after the Christmas I received the pen. I'd come by myself for the holiday. The painter had his own plans with his mother and father. I stayed Christmas night in the guest suite next to the writing den. My presents made a nice pile at the foot of the bed, and I must have slept late because the sun was high over the snow-covered putting green, and I could smell coffee long past its first perk, wafting from the room next door. My mother's husband tended to stay all day in the writing den, so I didn't change out of my pajamas, just went downstairs to find my mother and scare up some breakfast. At the foot of the stairs, I heard a loud bang. My mother was a big redecorator, so I assumed she was moving a sofa. And then I heard a louder bang, more like a chest of drawers against a wall. Voices like growls could only be the television, tuned to a low volume, so as not to disturb the writing process. I took a quick look at the manger display my mother set out in the foyer. Sweet, a big part of my childhood. Even the hay was arranged nicely, and all the ceramic farm animals had pleasant shapes. I heard the word cunt quite distinctly from the kitchen and turned my head. The chest of drawers banged against a wall one more time. My mother had painted an old heavy cabinet with white enamel, and I thought, without really thinking, she might be wrestling it into place. But then I felt a strange fear that buckled my legs as I rounded the corner into the kitchen and found my mother backed against the wall, her husband pressed up hard against her, face purple. I wasn't sure what I was seeing, and when they both turned to look at me, my mother laughed, but with an odd kind of disdain. She pushed her husband off of her. He said something about coffee and left the room through the dining room door. I didn't know what to ask, and my head hurt as if my skull, as if it were my skull that had been bounced. My mother attended to her hair. She coughed and smiled, lifted a hand and her eyebrows as if to curtail the next obvious thing I might say, and walked past me through the door I'd entered to meet her husband at the manger. But he'd beaten her to the foyer and was already walking slowly. I could hear him above me, down the long, book-lined hallway to the writing den. My mother's husband didn't just want to write novels. He wanted to write bestsellers. At the art movie theater, we understood what he would never believe, which was that no one. We liked to talk in terms of multiple lightning strikes. We weren't entirely original in this. Got the recognition they deserved. We tended to read, perform, and scrutinize, often with devastating candor, the work of each other. We were envious, backbiting, and deeply critical, even scathing and destructive during lagtime discussions in our polyester smocks. We were lucky, though. We had a context, and we had an audience, and there were more than two of us. When things got too painful, we switched our shifts. My mother and her husband only had each other in a house that they'd built to be so graceful and accommodating, they'd never have to leave it.
Is this the volume? Oh, you see it?